Good afternoon. I'm Tom Lounges. This is Midwest Beats. You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Thank you so much for supporting the arts and supporting public radio. This program is usually based all about music and musical artists and people involved in the music business. Today, we're going to do a little bit of a switch because it is about the arts. So we're going to talk about Ann Landers, the lady with all the answers. In just a few minutes, we'll have Philip Potempa. He is a Post Tribune columnist. He's a book author, and he's a guy that's got all kinds of memorabilia about this great lady of the press. There's a big play, a musical. I don't know if it's a musical. It could be a drama. We'll find out. It's called Ann Landers, the Lady with All the Answers. It's happening at the theater at the center coming up. It runs July 12th through the August 12th. And we're going to have Phil in here to talk about his collection. They'll have an exhibit there of his memorabilia as well. Coming up on the second half, I was cut off a little bit there because of the news, but we'll have Jen Kerr coming in to talk about CDB oil. It's the new thing. Everyone's talking about it. It's good for what ails you, they say. We'll find out exactly how to determine what good CDB oil is, what it's about, how it works, what it works on, and all that good stuff. And we'll probably be taking calls on that second half. So watch for Jen Kerr to come in between 1 and 2. Phil Potempa will be joining us shortly. But right now, just to keep into the groove of what the show initially is all about, and that's music, I want to celebrate a birthday of a friend of mine, a guy I've had the opportunity to, I wouldn't really say friend, I'd say associate, that I've had the opportunity to work with, interview, and in fact, he's been on this show a few times. Born on this day, 1942, Mr. Roger McGuinn. Of course, rock fans and folk fans know him as the lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter of The Byrds. The Byrds were a great, influential band. They tied in tightly with Bob Dylan, gave us songs like Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, a great version of that. But they also wrote some wonderful songs. And I think I'll start this one off by letting the old chestnut mare out of the stable. Going to send this out to my wife, Alice, and all those that love horses. This is Roger McGuinn as we celebrate his birthday, born on this day, 1942, with The Byrds and Chestnut Mare.
Always alone. You have to take my word. I'm going to catch that horse if I can. And when I do, I'll get with my friend. Well, I was up on Stony Ridge after this chestnut mare. Been chasing her for weeks. Well, I'd catch a glimpse of her every once in a while, taking her meal, bathing. Fine lady. This one day I happened to be real close to her, and I saw her standing over there. So I snuck up on her nice and easy, got my rope out, and I flung it in the air. I'm gonna catch that horse if I can. Pulling on her, and she's pulling back like this mule going up a ladder. And I take a choice and I jump right up on her. Damned if I don't land right on top of her. And she takes off, running up onto the ridge, higher than I've ever been before. She's running along just fine, till she stops and something spooked her. It's a sidewinder all coiled and ready to strike. She doesn't know what to do for a second, but then she jumps off the edge, me holding on.
Above the hills, higher than eagles, were gliding, suspended in the sky. Over the moon, straight for the sun, we were riding. Black one.
this red thing below us coming up real fast, and it's our reflection, this little pool of water about 6 feet wide and 1 foot deep. And we're crawling down right through it. We hit and we splash to dry. That's when I lost my hold, and she got away. But I'm gonna try to get her again someday.
Happy birthday to Mr. Roger McGuinn. On this day in music, Roger was born. Yes, he was, 1942. Roger McGuinn, of course, not only a member of the Byrds, but also a member of McGuinn Clark Hillman and a solo artist. And one of the things about Roger that's very cool, he made my Times column last Thursday because he and Chris Hillman of the Byrds are reuniting for the first time in a long time. And they're going to be backed by Marty Stewart and his group. And they're doing a celebration tour to mark the 50th anniversary of one of their greatest albums, Sweetheart of the Rodeo. So they'll be out on the road touring and doing the entire Sweetheart of the Rodeo album with Marty Stewart and his band backing them up. And, of course, I'm sure they'll be doing some of their own hits from their different various careers as well. So happy birthday to Roger McGuinn. Long may you rock, my friend. He's an incredible guy. Maybe we'll get him back on the show to support that that tour they're doing. He was also part of Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder review, and for that reason alone, he has the cool factor. All right, another thing that happened in history today, and we're going to get Mr. Philip Potempa on here and to start talking about Ann Landers, is, let's see, the Animals. Eric Burdon and the Animals. I had the opportunity at the old Star Plaza Theater in 1984 to MC for their reunion concert with all original members. But 20 years prior to that, on this day in history, the Animals went to number one on the singles chart with a remake of a public domain song about a house of ill repute. Yes, indeed, they sang about those things back then. It was called The House of the Rising Sun. Of course, everyone knows that song. Several versions have been recorded from blues artists to psychedelic artists like Frigid Pink, but this is the one that everyone seems to gravitate to when they think of House of the Rising Sun. They recorded it in just one take, and this was the number one song of the year, 1964. The Animals, House of the Rising Sun.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the Rising Sun. God
of the Rising Sun went to number one on this day in history, July 13th, 1964. Eric Burdon and the boys recorded that, of course, took it to number one, as I mentioned. I had the opportunity in 1984, 20 years after that song hit the charts, to MC for them at the Star Plaza Theater. It was their reunion tour, and it was the all-original band back together. Sadly, they hadn't learned to get along any better 20 years after the fact, and it was a one short-lived tour, but it was a lot of fun to hang out with those guys. I did have some good memories of that show, one of the many at the Star Plaza Theater. And for those that have gone by, shed a tear. It's gone. It's just a pile of rubble now. Phil, you spent a lot of time there. Phil Potempa has just joined us. We're going to talk about Ann Landers, of course. But you spent a lot of time at the Star Plaza. And what are your thoughts? Just wondering.
Just every time I've heard you just earlier in your broadcast say, the old Star Plaza, it sounds so strange to hear that because it just always seemed as though it would be an entity we would have. Because you and I were there, I read your stories on the wall. They would have framed for the 20th anniversary, mm-hmm. 25th, 30th. So you just always thought there was going to be a 40th, 45th. They would continue on. It was such a landmark. And it's surreal to think. I will say this, though. After they said, okay, it's going to be removed because we don't see it fitting into this new design of the new hotel. And then suddenly there was this, oh, no, it's been saved. It's gonna. Right. I was a skeptic at the very get-go. I thought, I don't see that suddenly you just flip a switch and say, oh, no, let's keep it after all. So not that I was being, negative, but I didn't see that happening. So, yeah, unfortunately, I'm glad we have all the memories we have, Tom, from all the time spent there with so many great names and legends.
Unbelievable amount of people that played there. All the different genres, all the different generations. And someone else that impacted many generations was our topic today, Ann Landers. And, of course, she is the subject of this new play. And is it a musical? Is it a drama? What exactly is this?
It is a play. You're correct. It is a play. It has a little bit of humor in there. It's not often that we have to put that little reminder that it's really best for ages 13 and older, although everybody knows their own family members, and what degree they might, be maybe raise their eyebrows to some content, only because so many people wrote into this advice columnist with so many varied topics, and of course sex was a number of them. So it dances around some things that you just want to keep in mind. But yes, it is a drama and it's a play.
And is it a one-woman play?
It is. It stars the wonderful Janet Ulrich Brooks. She is a Chicago actress who has done these types of performances before. She did a fantastic run as Rose Kennedy that was at the Greenhouse Theater, I believe, in Chicago not too long ago. And so she fills those shoes just fantastically. I saw a couple of the previews already. And I'd seen two other incarnations of this in Chicago previously.
Starring her?
No, starring other actresses. Okay. And there were so many things I'd even forgotten. And again, I feel like I'm kind of an expert. I know a lot about Ann Landers because I knew Epiletter, the woman who was the Ann Landers, woman behind that pen name so famously. But there are things I'd forgotten until I saw this play. So I do recommend it.
And it says it's running from July 12th to August 12th, which was, of course, yesterday. So it opened yesterday?
Yesterday were the preview performances. Okay. So for those that aren't always in the theater circles, the way the nuts and bolts work, there's always an opening night, which in this case is Sunday night at 7 p.m. is the big press opening night.
I'll be there.
That's right. We are expecting you to be there. Fantastic. And you get to see all this for yourself. And then the days leading up, there's always about five or six, four, five, six preview performances. That's where there's a chance to fine-tune a little bit and work out anything that might be, let's emphasize this line a little bit more or hold for the audience laughter a little bit longer. And then after opening night, it's like a cookie cutter. It's cut, it's done. That's what you're going to see for the rest of the run.
All right. Now, this is called The Lady with All the Answers. It's written by David Rambo and, as you mentioned, starring Janet Ulrich Brooks. How long has it been around, the play?
It has been around for about the last 10 to 12 years, I would say, roughly. I have to say, a lot of times people get their playbill program at a production, and they flip through it a little bit. This is one you want to take home, because when I was glancing through it, it has all the history of the play itself. And after Ann Landers passed in 2002, pretty quickly, within 2 years later, I want to say around 2004, this play was written with the blessing of her only daughter, Margot Howard.
Mm-hmm.
So she did collaborate a little bit with it as well. Matter of fact, I think in the play billing it says also with Margot Howard's influencer or assistance with some of the research. So it really is. It's true, and it's letter perfect.
Now, you have a collection. We're going to talk about that in your history with her. But it's interesting to note, as I was looking into some things to talk with you about today, I didn't realize that Ann Landers was actually just the name of the column, so to speak, that it originally started in 1943 by Ruth Crowley. Esther or Epi was not the first columnist to use that name. So tell us a little bit about that. That was fascinating to me.
That is what so many people do not realize, or the fact that actually this whole idea of advice columns, even though we think of Ann Landers and her twin sister Dear Abby, have pretty much invented it for mm-hmm. our generation. They've been around since the late 1800s. The biggies like Joseph Pulitzer and William Randolph Hearst, they knew that these columnists and personalities were something that would sell newspapers. So the two that really originated this was this Beatrice Fairfax, and then her counterpart, there was always got to be another rival, mm-hmm. was Dorothy Dix. Both of these women wrote their columns right up into the late 1940s until they passed. So the time was just right for somebody to step into the advice column business. And you mentioned Ruth Crowley being the predecessor who wrote with the Ann Landers pen name. And she was a nurse that wrote this column for the Sun-Times. And then when she passed, Ann Landers, you know, applied for the position, got the position. But she really didn't want to just be hidden behind a pen name. She made that column also a personality. And the way she did that is she went to her editors and said, rather than me being a ghostwriter behind this column pen name, mm-hmm. I think I should reveal my identity. And what better way to do it than the classic game show, What's My Line, with Dorothy Kilgallen and Arlene Francis?
Yeah.
She was the guest panelist, not the celebrity guest at the end, but just a panelist. And you had to guess what her occupation was. And somebody said, oh, you're the one that writes the advice for the Lovelorn column. But they didn't even know the name Ann Landers. Oh, do you write and so she's the Ann Landers behind the column. So interesting how that really wasn't really such a household name until she did what she did to promote it.
Now, she was originally from Chicago as well?
She's from Iowa, actually. Okay. Sioux City, Iowa. Her and her twin sister, Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, known as Epi and Popo, the twins, born on the 4th of July.
Wow.
And so they always kind of thought all the attention fireworks were about them, of course, not realizing that there was something bigger for a celebration on July 4th happening. But then the two twin sisters moved on to the Midwest, first around Wisconsin area, and then Anne and her husband moved to Chicago, where she planted roots.
Wow. Epi and Popo sounds like a rap group.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, like it does. Eric B. and Rakim,
that's
you know?
Right. Epi and Popo. That's right, it does.
No, it's interesting because we mentioned that she wasn't the first, but she was the last. Is that because she was so indelible and so larger than life that they couldn't find someone to slip in? We all know, the Mike Roycos, the people.
Yes.
They're irreplaceable.
Right.
You know?
Well, she did something very, very clever, and you got to tip your hat to her. She didn't own that pen name. The Sun-Times owned it. And there was a time when Rupert Murdoch came in and swallowed up the Sun-Times. All these media titans have gone through the mm-hmm. changes that our poor newspapers are all, working to try to survive the waves of recent, changes in the industry. But when he purchased the Sun-Times, Mike Royko was the first to walk off and say, I'm going across the street to the Chicago Tribune. And Ann Landers said, I'm not going to work for that man either. I'm going to do the same. Well, the editor said, no, your column is so, so vital. And her contract had just run out. So she could have left if she wanted to. She negotiated, but a part of the negotiation was that she would own the rights to the Ann Landers name. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very smart, very business savvy. To which she finished the contract, which I don't know, was a 2-year extension, and then immediately left across the street to the Chicago Tribune and took the column and the pen name with her.
Ooh, so that had to burn some people.
Yes, yeah. Back then, you know this better than I am because your history at the Times was longer than even what I had there. And rival is rival. Times, Post Tribune, Chicago mm-hmm. Tribune, Sun Times. And even when it came to syndicated features like an astrologist with the horoscope or the comics that you had, there were readers that purchased their paper based on those standing features each day. If you
right.
didn't have, Beetle Bailey in your paper, maybe they went the other paper. Or if one paper had Dear Abby, the other one would have to have advice columnist Ann Landers. So quite
right.
a competition.
That's kind of neat that they're sisters and rivals at
right.
the same time. How did that happen?
And this is all explored in this wonderful play, The Lady with All the Answers. So you get that insight into how Ann Landers first launches the column in 1955 here in the Chicago Sun-Times, ask her twin sister if she would help because there was such a volume of mail coming in. The sister says, oh, I'm kind of bored, and yes, I would be happy to, and then relocates to the West Coast, and 6 months later, without telling her sister Ann Landers, launches Dear Abby in the San Francisco Chronicle, I believe, or the Examiner Chronicle, I believe, and of course, it makes perfect sense. Again, if you have one that's a popular cottage mm-hmm. industry, well, launch a rival, and then you know it's gonna, especially the fact that it's twins and they look exactly like, same bouffant hairdos, and so the rivalry was born. Yes.
How did that affect them personally? Do you know?
Well, they had certainly a lot of hills and valleys in their relationship over the years, and they lived to be, you know, Anne, I think it was 85 or 86 when she passed from cancer, but they had these times where they would not speak, sometimes for 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
Based on these types of feuds. So first launching the rival column, that certainly didn't help any. But then the media being the media, Life magazine did a huge spread that said twin sisters torn asunder with rivalry. And it was meant to be kind of some publicity. And both sisters agreed to do the interviews, while Abby's was much more, I think, cutting and biting towards Anne. So I think there was always this bit of envy and the two always did compete. They both were women of means. Anne Landers was married to Jules Lederer, who started Budget Rent-A-Car. So she had her own, you know, money, while Dear Abby's husband was Morton Phillips, was a very, very successful industrialist and businessman, always had a larger mansion and always had cooks and servants, where Anne had servants but not to the extremes. They competed on many levels.
It seems like it would be hard for someone living in those ivory towers and those mansions to connect with the average person having a real problem, a blue-collar problem.
Right, but I don't know that the average reader, let's say in the middle of Couts or where I'm from in San Pierre, North Judson, in the middle of the cornfield, I don't think anybody read those columns and thought, I wonder, oh, why? Because I don't think people really had that kind of promotion or publicity to show, oh, look at the opulent mansion that they live in. I think they knew that they were comfortable, but they were sort of the everyday voice of reason. And I want to get back to that point that you said, why didn't the Anne Landers name continue? So she did own the rights to it. And I've often wondered about this. You know, Dear Abby also owns the rights to hers. She passed along to her daughter, Jeannie Phillips, who writes Dear Abby today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Anne also has her own, you know, daughter, one child, Margot. And Margot has always told me that I didn't want that column. I didn't want the name. My mom asked me years ago, and I never wanted to work that hard. But I don't know, because Margot ended up launching her own column named Dear Prudence. So I have a feeling that maybe Anne herself just didn't want to carry it on, or maybe didn't believe that carrying it on with Margot, it would continue to have the lasting impact that she had worked so hard to create after, you know, four decades. I don't know. It's not documented. It's only their version. And, you know, Anne Landers just said, when I go, she told me to herself, when I go, I'm taking the name with me. There will never be another Anne Landers. So
now, did Dear Prudence, is that a Chicago-based column?
No, she was based in Connecticut, but see, she didn't even continue that. She did it for a number of years, but only twice a week it was syndicated. It was with Slate Magazine and some other outlets. But I can remember our friend and our benefactor, Bill Nangle at the Times newspaper, when Anne passed away and I wrote her obituary, the next thing was to decide, what are we going to run for the replacement? And, of course, the go-to, what you would think, would be Dear Abby. And everybody would, and so I'm sure Abigail Van Buren, her twin sister, probably thought, well, if nothing else, I'm going to really increase my readership. But then there was also the option, the syndicate said, you can do Ask Margot, or it was a Dear Prudence Ask Margot. I can't remember the title of it. But it would only run twice a week. Well, that didn't help us as a daily newspaper.
Right.
So then they decided to launch this Annie's Mailbox, which was Anne Landers' longtime secretary/editors, and so they launched that feature, which is what the Times then picked up after the passing, and the Post Tribune stuck with Dear Abby for a number of years after that.
Wow. Is there anyone in the world today that's writing a column like this that is even close as far as impact?
Well, the Chicago Tribune themselves then thought, we'll just make our own advice column, which is Ask Amy Dickinson. And I would believe that she would be pretty close to it because of the fact that she had the entire Tribune machine behind her to help promote her. But, you know, it's just there aren't as many newspapers even left. So
true.
I want to say that maybe she's syndicated, I'm thinking, around 200 newspapers. Anne Landers and Dear Abby, they're syndicated in 1,200 or 1,400 newspapers at their peak, so it wouldn't be nearly the same impact. The Annie's Mailbox, I think, was pretty popular because it was sort of the connection to Ann Landers, that these were her previous associates writing it. But they only did it about 12 years, and then they retired. Kathy Mitchell, who was from Indiana, from Marion, Indiana, and Marcy Sugar were the two ladies that wrote that. And it was successful, but I think after 12 years, they had had enough as well. Yeah. So it's not easy. It's a grueling task to keep up every single day writing a daily column.
And you're held accountable. I mean, if you make a wrong suggestion or there's fallout, and yes. Anne had that happen.
Oh, she did.
I specifically remember the one about rice. She was about throwing rice at a wedding, and she said birds explode.
Oh,
and
really?
Yeah. Okay. There was. I just remember that controversy because I'm into the animal stuff, uh-huh. and I thought, wow, birds explode? And I guess if they eat certain kinds of rice, it can swell and uh-huh. explode with the body moisture. But certain kinds of rice couldn't. And she caught a lot of heat, I guess, from the rice industry.
Really? That's serious. I could see that happening. I know that all of a sudden it became very unpopular to throw rice, and then it became bird seed and other things. And I was never quite clear if it was, you know, harmful to the animals. But I remember hearing that, or if it was just messy to clean up, if it rained and it got,
well,
you know,
bird seed be just as messy.
That's true. That is true. But yeah, you're right. She one time made a remark about the Pope being Polish, and used an unkind word for Polish. And, you know, she herself had to write an apology. And her famous term, you know, was, I deserve 12 lashes with a wet noodle, or whatever her expression was. Hmm. So she would sometimes be called on the carpet, and she would admit it. Would she be able to navigate today's waters where, as you know, as a writer, you know, even as a columnist or even as a theater critic, you've got to be so careful everything that you say, because there's a new level of sensitivity. And you know, if today somebody tries, then they've succeeded is supposed to be kind of a lot of times the motto adopted by different generations that wasn't always the same. So I don't know. It would be tough for somebody like her today, I think.
All right. We are talking with Phil Potempa. He is connected to this wonderful performance that's happening right now as we speak. Ann Landers, The Lady with All the Answers. And, of course, we mentioned that Dear Abby is a rival columnist as well as a sister. And there are songs that have been written about these wonderful ladies. There's one by Becky Bluefield that is in... actually, it's in Spotify and a few of these others. It's just called Dear Ann Landers, and I do not have that one handy, but we do have the one written by Chicago folk legend John Prine about her sister, Dear Abby. So we're not going to play Ann Landers. We're going to play Dear Abby, and we'll be talking with Phil about his collection that will be on display or is already on display. We'll find out after this. John Prine.
Dear Abby. Dear Abby, my feet are too long. My hair's falling out and my rights are all wrong. My friends, they all tell me that I've no friends at all. Won't you write me a letter? Won't you give me a call? Signed, Bewildered. Bewildered, bewildered, you have no complaint. You are what you are, and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, my fountain pen leaks. My wife hollers at me, and my kids are all freaks. Every side I get up on is the wrong side of bed. If it weren't so expensive, I'd wish I were dead. Signed, Unhappy. Unhappy, unhappy, you have no complaint. You are what you are, and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby, dear Abby, you won't believe this, but my stomach makes noises whenever I kiss. My girlfriend tells me it's all in my head, but my stomach tells me to write you instead. Signed, Noisemaker. Noisemaker, noisemaker, you have no complaint. You are what you are, and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, well, I never thought that me and my girlfriend would ever get caught. We were sitting in the back seat just shooting the breeze, with her hair up in curlers and her pants to her knees. Sign, just married. Just married, just married. You have no complaint. You are what you are, and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Sign, dear Abby.
Dear Abby, that is Chicago's own John Prine, who just released a new album. He's still doing strong. Doesn't live in Chicago anymore, but he does visit here often. So, John Prine, no, Chicago legend. And speaking of Chicago legend, Ann Landers, one of the great columnists here in the Windy City. The play, The Lady with All the Answers, is in production right now at Theater at the Center at 1040 Ridge Road in Munster. You can get information and tickets at theateratthecenter.com. And one of the things about Theater at the Center is that no matter where you sit, it was kind of like the Star Theater, but smaller. No matter where you sit, every seat in the house has good sight lines. You can hear everything, see everything. It's not quite theater in the round. It's like theater in the three quarters, I guess you'd say.
And I got to tell you, with this set, this is the word I've been using to describe it, is absolutely opulent. Because what's been recreated at the Theater Center, at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts, is Ann Landers' Lakeshore Drive apartment right along the Gold Coast there. And it was quite posh, the real one. And this one really does a fine tribute to it. It's elegant. And you basically get to spend, you know, an hour and a half with Ann Landers talking about the famous letter she's gotten, her own woes, her own problems, her, mm-hmm. her twin sister, and in this lavish apartment.
Now, let's talk about the fact that in addition to seeing this amazing performance, if you come early or stay a little later, you can see the exhibit that you have put on. Now, how did you connect with Ann Landers to start with? You became very dear friends with a lot of famous folks. I remember when Phyllis Diller died, you were a big fan and a friend of Phyllis. You would go stay at her house. And you've had that connection with a lot of different celebrities, especially the golden age, I guess you'd say. How did that all come about, and how did you get to know Ann specifically?
You know, it just – a lot of times, and you know this as well as I do, some of these true names, these notable celebrities that – sometimes were larger than life, could be so kind and so nice and would remember a name. And if you cross paths enough with them, they'd say, oh, yeah, you know, they would remember.
You're the guy from Indiana.
Yeah. I remember this. Oh, sure, I remember this. And you know how it is. A lot of times they would come to these same kind of venues, so you'd cross paths with them. In the case of Ann Landers, it just happened to be that she had a new book out that was a compilation of her columns called Wake Up and Smell the Coffee, based on one of her famous expressions she would use, along with, you know, this reader's got a geranium in the cranium. She had so many of these witty.
Did she come up with the Wake Up and Smell the Coffee? Is that credited to her?
It is credited to her, but she actually also credits it to her Dear Abby's mother-in-law. So, because again, she would be quite close at times with, you know, her twin sister and her husband. And so that was something that she had heard. So she gave credit where credit was due, but that she used it in her column all the time. So she had a book signing way up north. I think it was in Deerfield, I want to say. So I went up there to interview her because it just made sense. You know, the Times carried this column. Why not do a big spread on her? And she would be seen around Chicago because she was based there quite often, but I didn't really know her. And she was so kind at the interview and so wonderful. And I asked her a lot of questions. She said, well, you know, because she's got kind of a special accent when she would talk. Ann Landers would talk like this, and she'd say, you know, if you're really curious about my twin sister, she's coming into town tomorrow. There's a big benefit for the Rita Hayworth Alzheimer's Foundation, and Popo's coming to it, and I'm coming too. Definitely you should come. There's a reception from 5 to 6. Definitely come. It's at whatever hotel it was at. And sure enough, they were there. They are. So if you see that photo floating out with myself with both twins, it was at that event, which we talked to kind of during the song being played. Ironically, you know, Abby had flown in because she had a huge mansion in Los Angeles that was right next door to where Rita Hayworth, the famous actress, lived. And so she said she would often see this beauty out in her garden with this raven red hair working in the yard. And then Rita Hayworth, of course, suffered from Alzheimer's disease, which ironically, dear Abby as well developed later in life. The original Abigail Van Buren, so Pauline Esther Friedman, her real name. And so she flew in town to help support this fancy fundraiser. And I took a lot of photos then, and I mailed them to Anne along with a copy of the story, to which she wrote back to me, and I thought, how ironic, Anne Landers is writing me a letter. Now, if you talk to a number of other journalists in Chicago, they'll say she was known, like Richard Roper, people will say she would write little notes and things. So that was not uncommon, but I was thrilled to it. And she had especially thanked me for the photos and said, "How what a rare talent," she said, "for someone to be a wonderful writer and photographer," and was just, you know, a small camera I'd taken them with. But there were photos of her and her daughter, because Margot had flown in too for it. And Margot told me later, she said, "You know, that photo of the two of us was always on her desk, and I wondered where that came from. It came from you. You're the one that sent that to her." So that's how we kind of struck up a bit of a friendship.
Wow. So you knew her from when to when? When did that happen?
That story was in 1996, and she died in 2002. So that would be the window, the stretcher. Now, when I say she died in 2002 from cancer, she had the terrible bone type of cancer that she didn't want any treatment or anything for. She really was outside of the public's eye with the last year and a half, I would say. So you really didn't see or hear much. She was still doing the column from her home on Lakeshore Drive, which I should emphasize. The play, The Lady with All the Answers at the Center, is based in 1975. So right about at the peak of things, where she's writing the most difficult column of her life, the column she has to announce that to all of her readership, she and her husband will be getting a divorce after 30-plus years. So that's what the actual play here in Munster Nan is going to be based upon. But so when she passed away, it was only natural when her daughter was selling off all of her things. I thought, I would love to have something. Well, when I found out her typewriter was up for auction, that's the signature thing she's associated with. Now, mine that I own that's on display at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts as a part of this exhibit, Making Headlines, is her manual typewriter, the one that would be her traveling typewriter she would carry
in
with her.
In a little suitcase?
Yeah.
I remember having one of those.
Yes. She primarily used an IBM Selectric, which is what we have on our stage for the actual play. That one went to Dan Savage, another advice columnist, a sex columnist. He was the lucky bidder for the electric typewriter. I got the manual one.
Okay. So what all is in the exhibit that you have? How many items do you have in your personal collection of Anne Landers things? And what do you have on example?
Well, this exhibit, South Shore Arts, it's called Making Headlines, from Anne Landers to Walter Winchell, goes until September the 3rd. It's free. As soon as you walk into the main atrium gallery, it's right there at the Center for Visual and Performing Arts. I said it's about 50 pieces, but then our publicist friends, Pat and Karen, said, "Phil, you really undersold that. There is at least twice as many things than more than 50 pieces, because some are large frame pieces, shadow boxes. But everything from Hugh Hefner's slippers that were sent to me as a gift are in a big frame shadow box on the wall mounted. Anne didn't.
Okay.
Hugh Hefner did.
Okay, so this isn't all Anne Landers.
No, there's a section of Anne Landers, and that's why it's from Anne Landers to Walter Winchell. It's other famous journalists and headline makers from the past century.
Wow.
Yeah, so because Hugh Hefner is mentioned in this play as well quite often, as is Irv Kupcinet, who is my personal mentor.
He mentored me as well.
Really?
I have a great picture of one of my prized possessions. It's Henry Rogers from Rogers and Cowan.
Oh, yeah.
Irv Kupcinet with me in the middle, looking very nerdish. I was wearing a V-neck sweater, short hair, the whole bit. And I went to lunch with them. I'd worked a lot with Rogers and Cowan, and Henry Rogers was coming to town to promote a book called Walking the Tight Wire.
Oh, okay.
Or the Tightrope, Walking the Tightrope. And he was having lunch with Irv, who was his good friend, and he said, "Why don't you join us?" Which, how could I say no?
That's right, yeah.
So I went out, and it was the three of us, and Irv and I stayed in contact for a while after that, and he said, "If you ever have any questions, call me."
What a good guy, huh?
Yeah, amazing.
And we are both old souls, Tom, because I think we're too young to really know the era when Cup really was at his peak. You know, it was 60s, 70s, 80s. I knew him much, much later in life. I have a photo with him as well. In my photo, there's a third person, too. There's Bob Costas from NBC for some reason. It was a reception. But then later, he always wrote his column right up to the end for 60 years. Imagine writing a column for 60 years. It's amazing. For the Sun. Always stayed at the Sun Times. Didn't cross the streets of the Tribune when Royko departed. And Ann Landers, he said, nope, I'm staying the put. But I knew him in his last 3 or 4 years. My mom and dad and I would go visit him at his also Lakeshore apartment. He had a caregiver named Patrick, and Patrick would say all the time, oh, please come see Mr. Cupp, you know, because he doesn't really go to the office. And a lot of times he feels like he's not really included, and a lot of that crowd, you would think they would come and see him and say hello, like Roger Ebert or people. Roger, of course, had his own health, you know, ailments.
Right.
He didn't get a lot of company, so we would go and visit him, and his apartment was like a museum of things. And one of the pieces I got from him is on display at this, is his director's chair from his TV show that he used to do, which that even predates me. I don't really remember him doing a TV show.
I remember hearing about
that. I guess
that.
It was like a syndicated, it was syndicated out of, based out of Chicago. Whenever there'd be a local or a celebrity in town for something, he would have him on this show of his that it would be taped. And so it's like a director's chair, and it's kind of cool because he's mentioned as well quite a bit in the play. You're going to enjoy this on Sunday. You're going to really enjoy this.
So if you're a fan of newspapers, you're going to hear a lot of names from the
yes,
past.
Yes, you will. Yes.
Wow.
And you know, and Hugh Hefner, he's not even that much from the past. I mean, he just passed in October. What's the last 6 or 7 months? So there are just names that have continued to be just legendary in the world of publishing.
And then, of course, we've got Phil Potempa and Tom Lounges.
That's right, exactly. Our bylines are still out there, so I'm knocking on as much wood as I can right here.
What's amazing, you keep mentioning all the Gold Coast apartments and things. What are we doing wrong?
I know. Yeah, exactly.
We're still here.
We're on this side of the state line. That's why. We're Indiana Hoosier claim to fame, and that's okay. We got to represent our state.
Now, Anne, as you mentioned, wrote some books. She, like Bob Green, she would collect, and other columns, they would collect some of their best columns and we put them out. How many books did she release? And are any of those going to be on sale at this event?
She did, oh gosh, if you go back, her first books came out, I think, in the late 50s and 60s. She probably did 8 or 9 books. The last one, like I told you, was that Wake Up and Smell the Coffee that came out in 96. So there won't be any of those books on sale at the Performing Arts Center, but they are still out there. And it's interesting, you know, I'm like you. I still like a book. I like to read a book. Mm-hmm. I want to take it with me on vacation. I want it in the car. I want it on the nightstand next to me. A lot of people are into tablets or something that's, another electronic version.
It doesn't feel the same.
I agree. I want to put a bookmark in there. So I'm sure these are all out there on the web, and you can get them.
Now, as a columnist yourself, what did you take away from reading her column, Abby's column, Cupp's column, you know, all of the artists or writers we've talked about? What have you taken away that you've applied to your own career?
I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I'm going to guess this. It would be something that would hit on the same stroke of, the ideal recipe. Connect with your readers. If your readers feel as though they know you and they can give you a tip or they can confide in you, then that's everything. If you seem as though you're in an ivory tower, which we talked about, why didn't people realize that they lived these wonderful lifestyles where if you went to Ann Landers' apartment, there would be a butler that would answer the door, and she had a chauffeur that, you know, would drive her because she didn't drive, in a car with a Vandy license plate that said, you know, AL 1955 for Ann Landers and the launch of her column. You know, they came through a voice that was just an everyday type of person, much like what we do when we connect to our readers. And I've always said that. I've always said, you know, the readers are first. Write for the readers, not for yourself.
Right, right. Did she comment or critique your columns at all over the years you knew her? Did she read your stuff and say, hey, Phil, I liked what you did here, but
no, only the things that I sent her. But ironically, another name that you and I would both know, and one of her colleagues, Roger Ebert, the movie critic for the Sun-Times, who also always stayed at the Sun-Times, when one of our columnist colleagues from the Post Tribune, Jim Gordon, passed away. He was their movie critic for years. And then as trims happen, he jumped ship and Bill Nagle brought him over to the Times. I don't know if you remember that
year and a half
or so before he had that untimely passing. But I did a whole tribute column because I thought, gosh, Jim Gordon, he would always go to the screening room. And Roger Ebert wrote me a nice email and said, I read this tribute. I'm so glad that you did this. So Ann Landers, I didn't really ever hear too much because, again, as you would know, she wouldn't really have access to our columns because the internet, I don't think, was much of a thing.
That's true.
If she died in 2002, It's not like today. We're now today. I do get emails like from Jim Gaffigan when I wrote about his movie debut for this movie about Ted Kennedy. He wrote me this nice email and said, "Hey, thanks for that shout out. I really appreciate it." So it is sort of nice to be connected to the internet and have your pros out there for the universe to see, which can also be sometimes a hindrance if you get a tap on the shoulder that says, "Wait, why did you write that?" You know, but you got to take the lumps.
Yeah, you mentioned Roger Ebert, and for a short time, I was also doing films for the Times.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so I would go to the screening room, and I remember Roger and Gene Siskel, and sometimes Pat Leonard, Roy Leonard, and there was a couple of other critics that would be there, and I always remember. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out, and I was a single dad at the time, and I had my little daughter, Sarah, who was just an angel at press conferences, and she sat there, and I said, "Do you want to go see a movie with me?" And she's like, "Yeah," so we went and saw it, and Roger was like a row in front of me and down, and after the movie, he came over to us, and he said, "Would you mind?" And I said, "No," and he pointed at Sarah, and he goes, "You're the audience for this movie. Tell me what you thought." And he, like, interviewed Sarah. And he included it, not by name, but he included it in his column. What a nice guy.
And what it makes perfect sense, you know? He is, again, writing for what the readership would or the audience would be for that. But you're right, very nice and very approachable. And, again, don't you sometimes pinch yourself and think, we are so lucky that our careers spanned, you know, really the golden age of newspapers, you know? And I think sometimes if I were born even just 10 years you know, earlier, we would really have been in the peak of when newspapers, 70s and 80s, you know, even more so. But, yeah, we're very fortunate. We really are. And again, this exhibit pays tribute to that, and this play does, too. The power of, the newspaper and the press. And the fact that Ann Landers in her column could bring change upon it. She put something in her column about cancer research. She could get bags and bags of mail to flood, you know, the Capitol and to our legislators, and they could be a catalyst for change.
Well, just what I mentioned earlier about the rice and the bird, she changed popular tradition by saying, "Don't throw rice."
That's right. That's
so
right.
I was looking it up. I just lost it again here. Here it is. It said controversies of her career. If you look on her Wikipedia page, I don't know how accurate Wikipedia is, but it says wedding rice and birds. In a 1996 column, she informed, quote unquote, her readers that they would should avoid throwing rice at weddings lest birds eat it and explode. Such advice was erroneous, of course, as milled rice is not harmful to birds. She later recanted.
She did. Okay.
So she had the class to say, "I made a mistake."
She would. She would do that. She would say again, you know, mea culpa that she had made a mistake, and she would own it, so that's good.
And the other one that you had mentioned about the Pope is in here. That was back in 95. She commented on the Pope being Polish, and she also talked about John Kennedy.
And then, one other thing she got a slap on the wrist for, and it's like, she got in trouble. I don't know if you remember this. A couple editors somewhere out in the hinterlands and Midwest, when they got her syndicated column, I think this happened in the early 90s when I was first starting, they said, "Wait a minute, I know I've read this column before. I know I have." And she was recycling some of her columns because she was taking a break or going on vacation. So she was just sending in columns that had previously published a couple decades ago. And some editor had been there long enough to recognize that, contacted the syndicate, and she admitted it. And they didn't have an issue, but it needed to clearly say that.
First of all, these are reprints.
Yeah, this is a classic Ann Landers reprint. And she, again, apologized. She shouldn't have done that. She just thought readers would enjoy it. But the syndicate also was probably thinking, "Well, we're not paying you to repurpose." But, you know, as a writer, sometimes we have to dig in. Yeah. Somebody passes away, you go and you look at your story. What was the interview? But, you know, in this case, you know, we'd always say.
And sometimes, columnists need a break, too.
Right, yes, exactly.
And if you have these wealth of vaults of great advice columns, why not recycle them? Because something from 1960 could still apply in 1980, and that generation hadn't read it.
Best of columns, we call it, right?
I like that.
Yes.
What's up next with you, Phil? You writing any books or doing any other projects? You're a guy that's always busy.
Yes. Well, we are well overdue for the next installment of the From the Farm column book.
Three or four?
I've done
now.
Three of them. Okay. And so there's a fourth one that really should be on the horizon, because the last one was in 2010, which launched around at the Star Plaza Theater on that stage. So I felt so proud that I got to say I did a cooking show on stage. And I know you were on stage to introduce different famous people through radio station promotions. But so we are
well
overdue.
I got to produce shows there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did all the Region Rumbles there. I produced the 10-band shows, 10 bands, 10 bucks all
day. That's right. That's right.
I helped on the Wallflowers and a few other ones, but yeah, that's some great memories there.
Yeah, I know. I know. That is just,
So you used to do them at Teebles, too. Are you still doing any of those kind of cooking demonstrations?
The Teebles charity dinners, we did our 10th annual one of those this past Valentine's Day. Usually on Valentine's Day, we would do it for the veterans and raise money, and there'd be a dinner, and it would be a theme, much like the exhibit that people can see at the Performing Arts Center. So we'll see. The next one would be in February if that were coming up. But, you just have to kind of – everything moves so fast in this world. You kind of have to kind of plan your time accordingly. So it's a stay tuned kind of thing.
All right. We've been talking with Phil Potempa. He is a columnist in the Post Tribune. He is also the guy that's got this great exhibit of over 100 items, if you count their publicist's account, over at the Theater of Performing Arts. And the play is Ann Landers, The Lady with All the Answers, running now through August 12th. The big event is this Sunday, and that is the official opening?
That's right.
Okay. Janet Ulrich Brooks, tell me a little bit about her before we let you go. Why is she good in this role?
She, again, you saw earlier my stretch of an attempt to do an imitation of Ann Landers. Clip
it was
voice.
Pretty good, though.
I'm telling you, Janet, she really nails it. She has got it down pat. And I love that there's a bit of interaction where she's talking to the audience and sort of bouncing some things off there of the famous column. So she, and as somebody who knew the Ann Landers, I got to say, she really has it. And some of those famous newspaper column topics, such as which way should the toilet paper roll be hung, it gets brought up.
That is really a debate. I've had that same debate with
towel.
Two or three people,
right.
In or out,
yes,
under
yeah.
or over.
Yeah, and so that comes up. And Janet, she has fun with it. She really does. So that in itself, it's tough to do a production and be such a legendary lady and carry it for yourself, for an hour and a half on stage. But, boy, she does it, and she has earned every one of those ovations and bows that she's about to get it with this run.
That reminded me when you talked about the toilet paper is Miss Manners. Remember Miss Manners?
Yeah, sure, yes.
That was another great columnist.
Yes.
I'm looking at a picture here that the publicist had sent, and of course the exhibit is making headlines, and it features not just Anne but other great journalists. And there's a portrait here.
Yes,
is that yours?
Yes, that hung in Anne's actual Lakeshore apartment. And a little fun fact: I mentioned to the director this. I said, "I know we're recreating her apartment on stage. Would you like the portrait to be incorporated into the set design?" And they said, "Well, I think it should be with the rest of the exhibit only because it would give more access for people to see it." But that also came from the auction. So at the auction, the main pieces I got from there were that giant original portrait, which Eppie sat for, Eppie, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Ann Landers, and then the typewriter we already talked about. And then you'll see a shadow box there on the wall there, kind
with
of black
keys.
Background with all the keys to different cities that when she would go and speak or go to visit a newspaper, the mayor would present her with the key. And the cool part of that, and you'll see this when you come there, there's a little photo embedded in the middle of her standing in her apartment next to two of those shadow boxes filled with keys. Well, at the auction, they broke open the boxes and sold each key one by one.
Oh.
So I bought back as many as I could, as well as one of the shadow boxes. And the wonderful framers, my friends Pat and Dennis Miller at the Artisan, who've done all my framing for me, pieced it back together and recreated it. So come out and take a look at it.
Wow. One last thing, and that is another photo here. And we had mentioned that this includes several different people. And you have the hat of radio commentator Walter Winchell, as well as a hat from Hedda Hopper. But correct me if I'm wrong. This is local trivia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I remember when Johnny Depp was in town.
Yes.
And you were in the film.
Correct, yes.
Did you, in fact, wear Walter Winchell's hat in the movie?
I did. I wore that very hat. And I still say to this day, when they were doing those auditions and said, we need journalists from the Midwest to play journalists in the film, and Michael Mann asked people to come out to Chicago to a casting agency and be videotaped reading, I came dressed in a trench coat and I wore that hat. And so I happened to mention to one of the segment producers about it. And when they filmed me afterwards, they said, wait, before you go, tell us about the hat. You got to tell Michael about the hat. And I just mentioned I'd gotten this at an auction and belonged to the real Winchell, who had covered Dillinger during those days in his mm-hmm. columns. And I still say that was what got me the part. And the fact that Colleen Atwood, who was the costume designer, she's won Oscars for her work, not on that film, but other films, she said, oh, definitely, we want you to wear the hat in the film. So that's a little tidbit. in the film, you see me wearing that same
I
hat.
I had heard that, but I've never That's asked true. You about that because I was there covering it from the outside when they were filming in Crown Point. And I remember seeing yeah. you in the film with it, and you're yes. like holding your pen, like
That's
waiting
it.
To ask the question.
That's it.
And that hat, I said, that's the hat.
That is. That's it. It's on display. And
wow.
Yeah, worn by a famous brow before mine.
Wow, there you go. Phil Potempa, my guest today on the first half of Midwest Beat. Thank you, Phil. We'll see you Sunday.
Sunday
at,
it is.
Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road, Munster, Indiana. Get tickets, get information at theateratthecenter.com, and you'll be there.
I will be there.
So
we'll see you
can
there.
Talk to the folks about the exhibit.
I certainly will. I'll be milling about. And most of all, thank you, Tom, and also to your listeners. And good luck on this Friday the 13th.
All right. Making Headlines, a guy that's made headlines, a guy that's going to be talking about the exhibit Making Headlines. And it's all happening right now, July 12th through August 12th, and, of course, Sunday, July 15th, 7 p.m. Forgot to tell you the time, 7 p.m. You can join Phil and join me and everybody else at this special screening presentation. And you can find out more, again, by going online, theateratthecenter.com, or calling 312-523-9357. That's 523-9357. We'll be back with Miss Jen Kerr and things that... Well, might ail you. Maybe we'll take care of that. But first, here's Mr. James Brown. Jump back, kiss myself. Ha!
Feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you. Oh! I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you. When I hold you in my arms, I know that I can't do no wrong. My love won't do you no harm, and I feel nice. That sugar and spice. I feel nice. That sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you. I feel nice, a sugar and spice. So nice, so nice that I got you. Wow, I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I would. You.